The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
Now, one gig that did go ahead this week was that James Vincent McMorrow pilot gig at the Ivy Gardens. Well, such excitement. We talked of little else for a few days there. And I watched it on live stream, and it was clearly a very emotional experience for everyone there, but I think especially so for James Vincent McMorrow himself. And I spoke to him yesterday on the morning after the night before, and he's an interesting character. Have a listen to this. So, James, you're a platinum-selling artist. You've enjoyed success all over the world, but mainly you're not right now in Ireland for playing a gig to 500 people last night. So how did it feel?
It felt great. It's a strange one because, like you say, it's the most effort that's gone into the fewest people in a long time for me. So, like, it was lovely. And I think seeing the 20 people that I've toured with for the last 10 years back to work was like worth the price of admission for me. So I feel amazing from that perspective. I think the show was incredible, cathartic, hard, because the distance between all the people was like very apparent. But like, you know, this is the reality we're presented with, like we're working within it. And from that perspective, I think everybody nailed it. So.
Yeah, you said during the gig you'd never been so nervous about anything. Yeah. I mean, I'd imagine it's the first one of your gigs that prime time were covering.
It was very funny after I got off stage. They're like, would you like to go on prime time? I was like, I can think of nothing I would like to do less than go on prime time right now. It was. It captured people's attention, I think, and it speaks to how much people want live music back in their lives and culture back in their lives. So, yeah, it was very strange.
Yeah, but listen, it's no surprise you're glad to get back out and glad to see the people, your touring band and crew working again, because I know that you you had an album, big album, ready to go last year. You had a tour ready to go. Yeah. And obviously all that was postponed. I saw you saying that you cried when you heard that it was all postponed.
Well, like, I think there was those delayed stages of like grief, I think, where like when everything came unstuck, the naive part of me kind of kicked in. And I think a lot of people were like, okay, we'll push everything out 3-4 months.
Yeah.
And 3-4 months became 6-7. There was one moment where I think it dawned on me and everyone collectively, okay, we're not going to be able to do even like the basics of what we thought we would do this year. So it was kind of obviously a devastating loss in the context of greater devastating losses happening around me. And that's the tricky part of last year in general, I think, for me and for a lot of people, is like, obviously everyone's experiences are uniquely their own. I was building my whole life based on this thing happening, and then it all came unstuck. But then you're talking to someone who has it way worse, and you feel incredibly guilty for feeling that sense of loss over a body of work that you'll still get to release in a year, right? But it's still like you have your plans and you have your life built around this thing. Yeah, so
your assumptive life and your assumptive future, I think they call it. So the album Grapefruit Season will now come out on July 16th. Can I ask, Grapefruit Season?
It started as a joke on tour, and it, when the life of a touring musician, as I recall it, is not the healthiest. And I think that we, at some point on a tour, I had a keys player at the time, and he used to eat a lot of grapefruit at breakfast, and I never enjoyed it because it just doesn't appeal to me particularly. But he was like, "It's so good for you," you know. And I was like, "But like, how good is it for you?" And he was like, "Well, you know," and it was just that thing. It was like an anecdotal sort of like tale about how grapefruit is just like this healer of all things. And it just became this running joke where we would treat ourselves terribly on tour, but we'd go to the buffet at the hotel and we'd eat grapefruit. So it sort of just became this thing in my mind where like it was an indicator of like, you're a grown up, you're living this really hectic life, you're not taking very good care of yourself, you're waiting for that moment of transcendent clarity, and it never comes.
Yeah. So you haven't got there yet. You haven't reached that moment of growing up and transcendence and it all making sense. No,
and I'm actually quite content, to be perfectly honest, with that never happening, because I think I spent most of my adult life waiting for it and really struggling within that, because I guess you look around and you see other people, and you, and like, this is the thing, right? Like, everybody has their things, and the world is so forward facing now that everyone presents a vision of themselves, that, and I do it too, I have for my whole career, a vision of myself that I think people want to see. In interviews, I used to be quite inert because I was like, no, the vision of me that people see is this sort of moody, reclusive singer-songwriter, and I need to present that vision. And then if I present that vision, it will be like a, you know, a reverse osmosis thing. It'll come back on me and I'll feel that way. And I never did. And then you just realize, yeah, like, you know, everybody is struggling. Everybody is presenting that same forward-facing vision. And I've just gotten a little bit more okay with the reality that I'm never going to have that sense of clarity.
Like, even looking at you last night playing that gig, you seem like a really confident person.
On stage, I am. And when I'm in my element, I'm as confident as I guess a person could be.
As the next guy.
The strangeness of it is, like, in my normal life, like, it requires an amount of almost supernatural self-confidence and self-belief to be a musician or work in a world where, like, when you grow up, the prevalent sense is, if you choose that life, it's a crazy life. You shouldn't do that. You should get this. This is the structure. And I completely ignored that structure from a very early age. And that requires an amount of confidence and sort of the ability to self-actualize. But that is also often found in people like me that are incredibly fragile and poorly built. I couldn't apply that confidence that you saw on stage last night to the most menial tasks for years. It just was a struggle for me.
And in what way? Fragile how?
It's hard to articulate. I'm just not a, like, when I was a kid, excuse me, like, I had my struggles and control issues and different things kind of manifested themselves.
You had an eating disorder.
I did, yeah.
You're okay to talk
about absolutely, that. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I think that there's, like, for years, I presented this vision of myself that was very, like, curated, and I never talked about that stuff, but I've never ashamed of it. Again, I just always thought, this isn't a thing that people want to know about. But obviously it is a thing that people should know about, because...
Yeah, and I think the conversation around mental health is very different from maybe when you were a teenager.
Completely.
And it's down to people like you talking about these things as well, which I think is helpful. Come here. So do you know why you got an eating disorder? Is that a stupid question?
No, it's not a stupid question, because it is often that thing that you ask yourself, why do these things happen to us? If I was to talk to a rake of doctors, they would tell you it's, you know, chemical imbalances in the brain that make you feel a certain way, or it's body dysmorphia. You see a vision of yourself back in a mirror that isn't a true reflection of yourself, and you respond to that vision. That was it with me. When I was a kid, I saw a person that I didn't particularly like. I felt very out of control, and the development of an eating disorder is, like, at its very root, is an element of control. You're controlling your environment when you can't control anything else. So that's where it stems from. And with me, like, the reason I never talked about it for a long time was because it kind of went away. Like, when I got to, like, 16, 17, I found a group of friends and I found music, and it became that sort of, like, it saved me, basically. And I felt much better. And when I felt better, those other parts of me dissipated and it went into the recesses. But I guess, again, with this album and thinking a lot more and trying to be a lot more, like... Like, direct and honest, you start thinking about these things, and it is sort of dawned on me. It's so obvious that, like, obviously my control issues just kind of, like, filtered into music, because I controlled my whole environment. Like, anyone that knows my career knows, like, I played every instrument. I learned every instrument in order to make those records. So it's all, like, born out of this desire to, like, control the world around me.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Like, it's a crafty thing, an eating disorder.
Sure.
Did you realize at some point you're in trouble, or...
I think when I was a kid,
I
think probably my parents realized that I was in trouble. I think that they sort of took steps to, like, take care of me at a time when, you know, you're like 50, I think I was 15. So you're not in a position to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And you think you're very good at hiding those things, and you're terrible at hiding those things. You know what I mean? Like, you think you're like James Bond. You're just out there, like, doing your thing, like, without people seeing you. And everyone sees you. It's in plain view from everybody to see. And I'm you just deflect and deflect.
So you guard it very preciously then, in a way.
Yeah.
In a strange way, yeah.
Yeah, you do, because, like, it's like anything, like, even today, like, there's been such a good and healthy normalization of, like, mental health and the conversation around it. But it still has so much nuance and so much that doesn't get spoken about, because it is still such a tricky thing. And it's such a, like, to put yourself out there like that and for people to know that thing about you in a very, like, plain spoken, candid way is quite an unnerving thing. Yeah. Not just for me as, like, a public figure, but, like, anybody. So, like, there's still this sort of, like, the words mental health get talked about. And I remember, like, I think, was it, like, Naomi Osaka at Roland Garros when she pulled out and she talked about mental health? Mm-hmm. And I remember listening to some podcast and they were talking about it and they were like, oh, I feel like she's diminishing the term mental health by talking about it this way, because it was an article that her sister had given talking about how she just didn't like people saying negative stuff. And they were like, isn't that just sports psychology? And it's like, yeah, but no, like, you have, everybody's truth is their truth, right? So, like, you have to, we're at a moment right now where everybody and their conversations about mental health have to have validity, and you have to take it at face value, because I think it needs to be normalized. I should be talking about this because I don't feel ashamed about it.
Yeah.
I never did. I just didn't talk about it because it just wasn't my nature. But now I kind of appreciate that I'm in a position where, like, if I do talk about it and do apply the nuance and the context that's probably missing from a lot of conversation at the moment, it can be helpful to people. I get a lot of messages from people talking about it, which is lovely. Genuinely a really nice thing to see.
Yeah, and I think we know over the last year as well hasn't been good for people with eating disorders and for teenagers.
No, not at all.
Did you get cured? Did you want to get cured?
I mean, what's a cure? You know, what's a cure for mental health?
Yeah.
Like you learn, like with my experience, you learn to understand what's happening as it's happening. Like, I have other friends that have, like, when you work in music, you have a lot of really candid conversations in the studio. And like, I've been in rooms with some of the most, like, famous musicians and people on the planet. And they talk about things that they wouldn't necessarily talk about in open life, because, again, they're presenting a vision of themselves that they think needs to be seen. But they're struggling massively with these issues. And no one gets cured. But in and of itself, the talking about it is helpful. And if you understand the triggers and you understand the signs and you say stuff out loud, you normalize the process.
So you manage life and yourself still?
Yeah, like, I mean, like I say, like, my control issues are still, like, a huge part. But, like, this is the weird thing about me is, like, I wouldn't be as successful as I've been if I didn't have these control issues. So you have to accept all of these things. You can't, like me sitting here talking about this isn't like, I wish I didn't have those control issues. I'm grateful I do, because I've done what I wanted to do on my terms. And that was all born out of the fact that I sort of found this path where I made music myself. Like, I went into a studio with people when I was a kid to try and be in bands, and it was just awful. And I was like, I'm just going to do this myself, because who can do this better than you? You know what I mean? Not in a sense of, like, I'm the greatest, but I just thought, if I do this, I'll be able to stand behind it and I'll be proud of it, whatever happens. Even at, like, a really, like, young age, I kind of knew, If I control it, I can live with it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
was helpful to me, because the worst thing for me would be the idea of something being out of control or someone else being the reason between success and failure blaming them for the rest of my life.
It sounds sometimes, listening to the music, like every sound that comes in and the point that it comes in at and everything is so tightly managed, but I imagine you staying up all night taking stuff out, like,
not far off the definitely it's gotten better, but like, I think definitely, like, especially on the second album, I was very like, I am going to push myself to the brink of, like, collapse to make this, because it mattered to me and it still matters to me, but it's different now. I appreciate that I don't have all the answers. As soon as I, like, open my world up to other people, it got a lot better, you know?
Yeah.
So like, it kind of, you have to learn in real time when you're making music or doing anything, I guess.
Can I just, one thing about, you know, people now talk about these things and you now talk about it. I believe at the time when you went back to school and stuff, you went for treatment for a while and everything.
Yeah.
Nobody talked about it.
No.
Not a word said.
No, no one talked about it at all. Even my best friends, like, I still, like, my best friends when I was 15, 16, and we're still incredibly close. And I don't think we'd even talk about it. Like, even they see me talk about it in articles and interviews, and they're like, I can't believe you're talking about that. Not in, like, a kind of like, what are you doing? They're just like, I guess it's just people, like, people still, like, you know, it's like there's this notion now that everything is like an open book, and it's just not true. Like, people just don't want to talk about the thing. You know, if it's a choice between talking about the thing and not talking about it, people will probably choose not talking about it 100% of the time if they had a choice, because it's easier to just not, right? Like, it's easier to just not ask that question. You have to get, like, the world has to move to a point where, like, you're asking the questions meaningfully and following up, and that's an amount of effort that very few people want to make. So, like, when I was a kid, you know, kids are kids. They just were like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. And the teachers were, you know, they didn't ask that many questions either. But maybe they did with my parents and I wasn't aware. But, yeah. Like, it's
tough on your parents, too.
Yeah, no, they did a great job. I think, like, I probably didn't appreciate it at the time. Because you resent it, like, you, like, when you're in those things.
Because they're interfering with your plan that you have gone on.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. And, like, so you don't appreciate it at the time. But, no, they did a fantastic job. And they found great people to talk to me and help me. And that was, like, massive. And, again, never, this is probably the first time I've ever, like, articulated that they did a brilliant job with me. Even though they weren't good talkers, you know. Yeah. They just weren't built to talk.
Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I think your mother more gave you, which I think has been important at times in your life, is religion.
My mom, like, because there was an article last week and I was talking about, like, where music came from me, and I was saying that weirdly a huge part of it came from when we moved to Dublin when we were kids. My mom started going to, like, a church in Swords, because I grew up in Malahide. She started going to a church in Swords. And, like, I grew up in a Catholic church up to that point. And it was sort of like, I guess it was like kind of like American kind of Christian Baptist type church. Yeah. I'm not super familiar with all that. I don't want to, like, get the denominations wrong or anything like that. But we started going, and music was very present in it.
Was it a gospel kind of?
No, it wasn't as slick as that. Yeah, it wasn't like, you know, like, make no mistake, it wasn't like.
Is there a folk mass?
It was spirited, and it was like, it was lively, and it wasn't like, you know, he will raise you up on eagle's wings or anything. But it was looser than that.
Okay.
You know, religion for me is like, it wasn't a huge part of my life in the grand scheme of things, but there was a point in my life in, like, when I was starting to make music where I went to a church and music, because I was so, I'm like, as I've been talking about, like, when I'm by myself and I'm in a room and I'm making music, I'm, like, in my element. And once you take me out of my element, like, anyone that saw my early shows could testify to this. Like, I was not a slick prospect because I was just very anxious. Like, what you saw last night on stage is 10 years in the making, you know? Yeah. And when I start,
and still not that slick.
Thank you. Whoa.
No, I mean the chatter joking. And stuff.
No.
Like,
oh,
you're winging it. Like, it's charming, thank but it's, you. Yeah. No, it's, no. Listen, music slick as hell. That band is tight.
They
I
are
was
amazing.
Thinking, are you like James Brown? Do you find them for mistakes and stuff?
Yeah. No. They don't make mistakes. I make mistakes. They don't make mistakes at all. No, the banter thing on it, like, to segue for a second, is funny because when I started, I used to talk so much, and someone, like, one of my, like, management team was just like, you need to, and this, to be fair, this is actually, it is insightful to the wider context of what we're talking about, because they were like, the vision that people want of a musician is quite sullen and quite, like, moody, I guess, for want of a better term. So they kind of, a few people around me on, like, management team, label team, kind of felt like, the talking between songs, the way, like, because I like to make jokes. I'm just a ridiculous, like, I don't take myself that seriously. I take music incredibly seriously while also understanding that life is ludicrous. So I make a lot of jokes, and I did. And they're like, you need to tone it down because it's too much. It's like pulling people out of the pocket. And I disagreed. But I did it for years and years and years. And it kind of made me feel quite inert. It made the show feel quite inert and quite like a mood piece. And then I started doing it again, and it was just so much more fun. And the show, I think the shows get a lot better because they think that human element needs to apply. I think people, especially last night, I was like, people need to, this is so static and ridiculous in its premise.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, no, these people need direction. They need to know what to do. So that was where I came from last night.
Yeah. But back to church then.
Yeah.
And church is there in the music, I think, isn't it? And even the backing vocals are like a very, very tight version of a gospel choir at times. Like,
Definitely. Like, you know, that, like worship music, And gospel music, while not being something that I actively listen to, like I said, for 3 or 4 years, I played in a church band, basically. I played drums and then I sang a little bit. And it was also like positive and also lovely. And
yeah.
And that was great for me because it was like an incubator or something. Like as opposed to being in Whelan's getting destroyed every night trying to play my songs, which happened, next.
Yeah.
But if that had happened when I was like 19, 20, it would have been like a disaster for me, like mentally. I wouldn't have been able to cope with it. So I love that part of my life because it was incredibly like wholesome and incredibly... And I'm built around friends. It wasn't really built around, like, I'm not a fan of organized religion.
Did you have the faith bit, God bit?
Listen, I'm sort of like, I'm quite nebulous in my thinking on it. So I don't want to like start making people think that I have these like well thought out like feelings on it.
Yeah.
Like I'm not a fan of organized religion. I would say I'm a fan of anything and anyone that says like they'll actively try and be a good person and be actively good.
Yeah.
I fundamentally.
I think a lot of people have kind of maybe walked away a bit from the institutional church, but have held on to some kind of personal relationship with God. Have you got that?
I mean, again, I wouldn't want to make people think I was like dropping a bended knee every day. It's pretty passive, but like I do have a faith in something bigger as well, right? Like I wanted to do this thing. And I definitely prayed about it when I was a kid. You know, I was like, please let me be a musician. And here I am. So it would be hypocritical of me to not think that there's something guiding my way.
Yeah, look, I'm not asking you to. I think people's faith is poetic and imagery and personal and you can't explain it. Yeah,
totally.
But I'd imagine, though, given the job you've gone into, that you probably need to have fairly firm values, do you, to keep yourself like on the straight and narrow and everything?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's like indie folk music, right? So like, it's already like the littest scene in the world. Like, it's pretty wholesome. Like, I don't know, like maybe music like in the like 60s and 70s obviously was like wild, but like my experience in music has been like fairly tame relative to my life before music, which was like as crazy as it was within music. Do you know what I mean? Because everybody is so business orientated in music now, like from top to bottom.
Are they?
Do
the artists have to be as well?
You have to be. You have to be. Yeah. Like from the very first moment of my musical career, like I was like locked into the business side of it, born out of necessity, because like in the beginning, no one cared. So I had to care myself and pay attention. And I find that with everybody, that like anybody that I know who makes music that I adore, they're not like, you know, business like obsessed boss or anything like that. It's more so that like people understand that it's a job.
That you gotta look after yourself.
Exactly.
Kamira, how are you now?
In terms of
in general?
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a daily change.
Yeah.
But like I feel probably as good as I felt in a long, long time.
Yeah.
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 Was it hard for you with your fragility, we'll call it, was the last 15 months particularly hard because of that, do you think?
I mean, again, it's that thing, isn't it, where like you don't want to, I'm always mindful of like my experience relative to other people's experiences.
I understand, but we're all entitled to our own story. Like,
No.
Was it tough for you?
Yeah, definitely. I think from January to like March or April of this year was like the worst that I've felt in my adult life, just in terms of like, music is the thing that's defined me for this whole, my entire lifetime. And when that thing gets taken away, you see the unfairness or the stark unfairness of a lot of that stuff starts coming into like, you know, stark relief, where you see other people almost thriving in these periods or like doing their jobs. Or even if you do get to do a basic pale semblance of your job, you start getting weirdly jealous of people in other jobs and other vocations because you're like, you get to keep doing the thing you get to do. And I would spend my days talking to all of the people that work for me, trying to figure stuff out. Can we do this tour? Can we do that?
Because you have a lot of moats to feed then. There's a big organization there that kind of all centers around
Well, I mean, that's 20 people last night. Like, that would be my touring crew. And then beyond that, like, I have a studio in the city. And I bring musicians through. And like, I've been giving people free studio time and doing all sorts of different things. But, like, the live touring is like everything to people. So you're trying to bring all these people in the studio and give them stuff to do. But it was all just like, you know, again, like a band-aid over a crack in a dam. It was, last night was the thing that we need to do.
Yeah. Well done on kicking off the optimism, hopefully, last night. And also, I would be very optimistic about grapefruit season. I think from what we've heard so far, it's going to be an absolute humdinger of an album. I'm very excited to hear it. And why don't we play out with Paradise, James Vincent McMorrow. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.